ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 19th of January. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Parliament returns today for a special sitting to respond to the Bondi terror attack 5 weeks since the tragedy unfolded. The government has been forced to revise its proposed hate speech laws, a key part of its response to tackle anti-Semitism. But it's still unclear if the coalition will give them the support they need to pass the amended legislation. Here's political reporter Romy Stevens.
Labor backbencher and Jewish MP Josh Burns says his community remains devastated after last month's attack on a Hanukkah festival.
It's really shaken the Jewish community. It's shaken our place in this country.
But he hopes steps will be taken to help restore that feeling of belonging as Parliament returns for a special sitting in response to the Bondi massacre. The Greens have ruled out support for toughened hate speech laws, so the government's relying on the coalition to get them through the Senate. But the opposition hasn't guaranteed support, which Josh Burns claims is disingenuous.
They have demanded for weeks that Parliament return. They've demanded for weeks that stronger protections against hate be introduced.
Opposition leader Susan Lee last week labelled the legislation unsalvageable. Then, in a bid to save the laws, the Prime Minister abandoned an offence, making it illegal to incite or promote racial hatred, which had drawn criticism from the left and the right. Josh Burns is now calling on the coalition to ensure the revised legislation passes.
It would be a complete betrayal of the Jewish community, who the coalition has made a lot of speeches to over the last couple of weeks, if they were to seek to water down further components.
But the opposition is critical of Labor's legislative response to the terror attack. Shadow Attorney General Andrew Wallace says the government didn't consult them before releasing its bill.
Susan Lee put to the Prime Minister before Christmas that she was willing to work on a bipartisan approach with him to come up with the right solutions, to come up with a workable bill, but the Prime Minister knew better.
The Coalition's Shadow Cabinet met last night with a final position to be agreed on at a full party room meeting today.
There are some provisions in there that increase penalties to offences that already exist. Now, those things are relatively unobjectionable, unless you're the ones committing the offences, of course, but I'm not going to signal here today which ones we're going to accept and pass and which ones we're not.
At least part of the government's proposed changes are likely to succeed this week, with gun laws expected to pass with support from the Greens. Gun control reform was originally part of an omnibus bill with the hate laws, but the government wasn't able to secure support. Now the firearm reform bill will be tabled as a separate piece of legislation. If passed, it would enforce a national gun buyback scheme and extra intelligence checks before licences are granted. Greens Senator David Shoebridge.
We know that reducing the number of guns in the community, that putting in place real-time reference checks and security checking before people get guns and get licences is a positive community safety message.
The Prime Minister will today move a condolence motion to remember the 15 people killed at Bondi Beach before the government's legislation is introduced tomorrow.
Romy Stevens there. The heartbroken parents of the youngest victim of the Bondi terror attack have given their first sit-down interview. Valentina and Michael have recounted the moments leading up to the deadly shooting and paid tribute to not just their daughter, but also the woman who saved their youngest child. Victoria Pengilly reports.
To a passerby, Matilda and Summer could have been twins, from sharing a bedroom to practicing their cartwheels and making silly videos.
Hi guys, today we're going to try different foods but we don't know the names.
Their mother, Valentina Poltovichenko, says the sisters shared a bond so strong they were inseparable.
At school they called them twins, even though there's 3 years between them.
On December 14, the girls were enjoying the Hanukkah by the Sea Festival in Bondi, playing with bubbles and having their faces painted. As families gathered for the lighting of the Hanukkah candle, the girls told their parents they wanted to wander a short distance away to the petting zoo. Then the first shots were fired.
I thought it was firecrackers and I told Michael, what a bad joke. Someone wants to scare us, like they know it's Jewish celebration and they did it on purpose just next to us.
After a frantic search, Matilda's father, Michael Britvin, found her first.
When I got there, she was already hurt and I was just trying to stop the bleeding. So I took off my shirt, stuffed it into where her wound was.
Nearby, 6-year-old Summer was being shielded by 20-year-old Natasha Williamson, who was working at the petting zoo.
She wasn't crying, but she was a bit unsettled at that point. So I just grabbed both of her hair, grabbed her hands, told her just to look at me, look at the floor, pretend they're fireworks.
A month on from the attack, which claimed Matilda's life, her parents are paying tribute to Natasha Williamson, who they say is a hero.
Summer would run after Matilda.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
Both parents have requested we identify Summer because they say Matilda's story is strongly tied to her sister. To honour her legacy, they say the park where the shooting took place should be renamed Matilda's Park. And they've suggested the footbridge should be memorialised and painted yellow in honour of the yellow sundress she wore on her last day.
I don't want it to be demolished. I want it to be in place so people can go on it and look at the park from the highest point and feel that pain that was just in front of them.
Slowly, the family are working through the events of December 14. They only recently returned to their Sydney apartment, unable to bear being at home without Matilda. As the federal government tries to push through new hate speech laws this week, they have a message to political leaders.
Criminals do not care about any laws you make about any speech or any guns, they will find their way. When the government tried to rush any laws, especially after some tragedy, they're never good.
Matilda's father, Michael Britvin, ending that report by Victoria Pengilly. And for more on that legislation, Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke joined me earlier. Minister, good morning. A big week ahead. You're back in Canberra. You've been personally involved in crafting this legislative response to the Bondi terror attack. Are you personally disappointed to be back in Canberra knowing this bill had to be split, amended, and is still looking for support?
Well, I'm certainly hopeful that we can bring the parliament together. Certainly today on the condolence motion, I've got every confidence that the parliament will be at one. But you've then got to start to turn it into action. And the point we've been making the whole way through is that to respond to Bondi, you need to deal with the motivation and you need to deal with the method. We need to deal with the why and the how. And that means laws that deal with hate and laws that deal with guns.
And you've got the support from the Greens for those gun reforms. When we spoke last week, you said you held some vain hope that the Coalition would support these hate speech laws. Do you still hold that hope?
Well, certainly there's parts of it that they had called for that they're now not supporting. And I would find it bizarre if their original call to split the bill was so that they could oppose it twice. Like, that would just be an extraordinary situation if that's where all this goes. Everything they've been calling for says they should now be turning up and voting for it. So obviously, you know, the government wishes that we had support to be able to criminalise some of the worst forms of anti-Semitism. The Coalition decided that they wouldn't support that. Now we've got, I read in the papers today, that on the listing of organisations, the Executive Council of Australian Jury are calling on people to pass that part of the bill. And the neo-Nazis are calling on people to oppose it. I, for the life of me, can't see in that binary why people wouldn't be simply backing the legislation.
The Prime Minister said without those racial vilification laws that have been stripped out, he wasn't entirely confident that the Jewish community would be protected from anti-Semitism. Does that mean that these laws fail to deliver on their core promise?
Oh, they don't deliver everything that we wanted them to. That's the simple fact. That's what happens when part of the legislation is withdrawn. But the reason for that happening lies at the foot of the members of the Liberal and National parties who only a few weeks ago were calling for tougher laws on hate and tougher laws on people who spout anti-Semitism. They're committed to opposing that. That's where that is. Parliament has to deal with whether you have a majority or whether you don't. And so the next issues are whether or not hate organisations can be banned.
There was some concern, not just from within the parliament, but also from religious groups, from community groups, legal experts, about how these laws would impact freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Is that not evidence that perhaps more time, more consultation was needed to get this right?
Well, first of all, on more time, the Liberal Party had called on us to sit before Christmas to introduce hate laws.
But the Coalition didn't set the timeline. This is the government's timeline. Was it too rushed? Was more consultation needed?
No. What I'm saying is the key people who were saying this is happening too quickly are the people who were calling for this to happen last year. In terms
there were some religious leaders, legal experts who also described this as rush, who said more consultation was needed. It wasn't just the Coalition.
And a large number of those people who were calling for further amendments were doing it on the basis that they were wanting the hate laws to apply to more categories of people, not no one. When you talk about freedom of speech, I know some people just take the freedom of speech side of the argument, but I've got to say, I am yet to believe that freedom of speech is about racist bigotry. Racist bigotry can be completely debilitating, and the pathway from extreme racist bigotry to violence is a very short path.
And Minister, I'm just going to move us on to the gun control reforms, which do look like they've got support to pass the parliament, but a challenge ahead still with that, with states like the Northern Territory, Queensland, Tasmania pushing back on jointly funding the gun buyback scheme. Can you get those states on board?
Oh, there's always a negotiation with the states. I don't doubt that the vast majority of states will have a very high level of goodwill on this, and there'll be conversations about the breadth and the structure of the buyback. The most important thing with the gun reforms is when I'm asked the question, if these had already been in place, would the two gunmen at Bondi had been able to have the firearms that they had? The answer is no. It's not that they would have had four instead of six. They would have been eligible for none.
So will the government foot the whole bill for those states who are refusing to pay up? I mean, the Howard government did wholly fund the 1996 gun buyback scheme.
As I say, negotiations with the states are standard, but I don't doubt the goodwill in making sure that there's an appropriate firearms response, and I'm confident that we'll get there with the states.
Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, thanks very much for joining us from Canberra today.
Great to be back on the program, Isabella.
European leaders have gathered for an emergency meeting as US President Donald Trump ramps up his demands for Greenland. The president announced plans to impose 10% tariffs on eight NATO members until a deal is reached for the purchase of the territory. Meanwhile, thousands of Greenlanders and Danes have taken to the streets to voice their outrage. For more, I spoke with Europe correspondent Elias Kluwer. Elias, what is the purpose of this urgent meeting?
Good morning to you, Isabella. Well, it's ostensibly to show unity, but also solidarity with Greenland and push back at the now seemingly constant threats coming out of Washington. Now, before this meeting was convened in Brussels, the eight nations that have been threatened with these tariffs by Donald Trump issued a very strong rebuke, perhaps the strongest we've seen from these nations. And it said that the latest threats could undermine the transatlantic relationship and send us down a very dangerous downward spiral. Now, of course, all of this comes after Donald Trump took to Truth Social to express anger, really, over those eight nations sending a very small number of military officers to Greenland as part of a reconnaissance mission. But again, in that statement from those eight nations, that joint statement, they said that essentially what they were doing was to show that they were very serious about security in the high north, which is something Donald Trump has been very openly concerned about. So, Isabella, ostensibly what they were saying was, we did this because President Trump, you told us to.
And Elias, we've heard a lot from politicians, from officials, but how are locals responding to the latest threats?
So I think there's a lot of anger on the island, but also a lot of anxiety because they're being used as a sort of diplomatic football. Let's have a listen to some Greenlanders.
I think he has lost his mind. I hope that there soon will be some more clever people in the States who will tell him, no, it's not going to work, this thing.
He's out of his mind, really. He's losing his mind. Well, he lost a long time ago.
Well, they're certainly not mincing their words. It does seem like this situation is heating up. Is Denmark proposing any sort of compromise with the Americans?
Absolutely. In fact, some have described it as the Danish government just rolling out the red carpet. They've offered or at least said they're open to discussing pretty much anything with the United States. That includes the US expanding its military presence in Greenland. We've heard discussions that they'll even allow perhaps the White House to rename the base there after Donald Trump. We've also heard that they'll allow the US to explore minerals and commercial opportunities on the island as well. But one thing it's standing firm on is that Greenland is not for sale. That's the Danish position, the EU position, and the UK's position. But it's still very incompatible with the White House's position because it appears as if Donald Trump has made up his mind. He believes that the island cannot be secure from threats in Moscow and Beijing unless Greenland becomes part of America.
Europe correspondent Elias Kluwer there. Australian Iranians say they're in crisis and want more support following the hardline Islamic regime's deadly crackdown on protesters. In recent days, Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei acknowledged for the first time that thousands have been killed during weeks of anti-regime demonstrations. Death toll estimates vary widely from 3,500 to as high as 16,000, with some here struggling to get information on their loved ones. Alison Shaw reports.
On the steps of Parliament House in Melbourne, hundreds gathered waving Australian, Israeli and US flags, as well as the historic Iranian lion and sun flag, a symbol of defiance against the Iranian regime.
I'm here for my people. I'm here to free Iran. I can't stay silent anymore.
All the people are here are asking for a regime change.
I've spoken to my sister 3 days ago for 54 seconds, just enough to know that they're alive.
Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has acknowledged the death toll for the first time, but blamed the United States for the deaths.
We consider the US president guilty, both for the casualties, for the damages, and for the slander he made against the Iranian nation.
Nationwide protests in Iran erupted 3 weeks ago over economic woes and swelled into anti-government demonstrations calling for an end to clerical rule. There are estimates more than 3,000 people have been killed. Authorities in Iran also imposed a communications blackout, largely cutting off the country from the outside world. Now there's been intermittent access, allowing some in Iran to reconnect with loved ones overseas. Rana Dadpour is an academic with James Cook University and the founder of advocacy group Oz Iran.
People who managed to get connected, they are telling us that even these estimates on nothing. What they have witnessed in Iran is a massacre.
When AM spoke to Rana Dadpour last week, she'd lost contact with her parents and extended family for over 5 days. Over the weekend, she managed to talk to her loved ones.
What I noticed still was the immense amount of hope that was in their voices. Like it astonished me. Like I'm about to break down, but their hope gives me hope as well. So people are waiting for help.
As many Iranian Australians fear for the safety of their loved ones back home, community leaders are hoping to provide mental health support for the diaspora. Saran Edgar is vice president of the Australian Iranian Community Alliance and was on his way to a community event in Adelaide when AM spoke to him.
We have about 50 people coming because we had some phone calls from other community members, and most of them, they just call, they just want to talk, and they cry on the phone. And you can feel how much stress they have.
Saran Edgar says he wants to see more support from the Australian government and from the Australian people.
They need international help. How? You know, it might be better to ask the politicians how they can do that. If they can in any way help the people to get rid of this dictatorship, they better do it.
Saran Edgar is Vice President of the Australian-Iranian Community Alliance, ending that report from Alison Shaw. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast.
he couldn't get it through the parliament. And so Anthony Albanese had to change course. Prime Minister has removed a racial vilification offence from Labor's proposed hate speech laws. What was in the doomed bill? And was it really that bad? Today, Professor Kath Gelber, an expert in regulating hate speech, unpacks it all. Look for the ABC News Daily Podcast on the ABC Listen app.